How many of you started off your new year with some New Year's resolutions? Probably a lot of you. If you're like most people, you sit down towards the end of the year or maybe the beginning of a new year and you start to assess the previous year and you start to assess the upcoming year and you make certain goals. And a lot of them are fitness related, whether it's eat better or lose some weight or get stronger, get faster, whatever the case may be, and you get all fired up. Maybe you write a plan, maybe you don't, but you have these goals in mind. And the first week, you come out hot, right? Because you're committed, this year is going to be different, et cetera, et cetera. And then what happens is towards the later half of the week, or even into the weekend, or maybe this week, now that it's the second week of the year, you start to have a little bit of fatigue, and maybe you kind of come back down to earth a little bit. If this is resonating with you, you're not alone. This is extremely common and quite possibly one of the main reasons why New Year's resolutions flat out don't work. This is backed by many, many studies that show that most people do not follow through with their New Year's resolutions. And I didn't realize this until recently that January 17th is National Give Up on Your Resolution Day or something stupid like that, where there's literally a day that's kind of, I don't know if it's a joke or what, but I think it's an actual thing that like there's an actual day, and it is about 2 weeks into the new year, 2.5 weeks into the new year on January 17th, that is essentially dedicated to you giving up on your goal. And I haven't looked into this all that much, if there's like a magic number when it comes to 17 days, or if it's like 2.5 weeks is like the average that somebody gives up on a resolution. But it just kind of goes to my point that New Year's resolutions absolutely do not work. And that's a totally different topic of conversation. Where I really want to go with this is, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. That's a very common thought, and it's something that a lot of people just kind of inherently know. And it is very applicable to your day-to-day life. I was talking to a friend recently, and that first week, that first few days of the new year, on fire, right? Like, fitness is going well, work is going well, relationships are going well, everything is going well in this person's life. And then we get to talking on the phone, and he just goes, yo, like, all of a sudden, like, I just don't feel motivated today. And I just feel like this one thing happened, and then there was a trickle effect or a domino effect where one thing turned into two and three and four. And next thing you know, like, my whole day is just completely out of whack. And he's like, do you ever have those moments where you just kind of question yourself and question the direction that you're going, and how do you deal with it? And so what I was explaining to him was that this individual is a kind of a pattern that I've noticed with this person, is that there's extreme opposite ends of the spectrum. He gets really high and then he gets really low. And I said, that's okay to do. It's not a bad thing to have highs and lows and ride the wave of your natural energy levels throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year. What people need to get better at, and this person's not alone, I'm the same way, and I know a lot of people out there are this way, where one day you're super high, the next day you're super low, and there doesn't seem to be all that much middle ground. And if this is resonating with you, what I encourage you to do, and this is the advice I gave to my friend, was find a way to find that happy medium. Find a way that you can identify, just knowing that that's the case, just knowing that you ride those waves. And for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So if you're having a fantastic day and you just seem very productive, everything's going well, your energy levels are high, maybe you slept really well the night before, well, you're essentially exhausting your bandwidth. You only have so much bandwidth throughout your day, throughout your week, throughout your month. So expect that there's going to be a little bit of a come down after that really, really awesome productive day. And if you can just wrap your mind around that concept, it's going to make you better at managing those highs and lows, but also expect those lows immediately following those highs. So for example, if you're having a great day, go to bed that night, reflect on it, have a nice evening, whatever you're going to do. but just know that the next day or maybe the day after, you're probably going to feel a little lethargic. It's like if you ever have done an event, like an athletic event where you just crushed it, it's very difficult to crush it over and over and over again. Your body can only, you can only put your body through so much before it needs a little bit of rest. So if you have a fantastic performance, let's say you bench press the most that you ever did in your entire life, you're going to feel a little tired the next day and the day after simply because you just placed your body under a stress and a stimulus that it's never experienced before. So it's very common for people to express, or I should say, report back and say, yeah, I'm really tired after that one effort that I had the other day. And that just makes sense, right? It's the same thing with your energy levels throughout your week. If you're having a fantastic day, expect a little bit of lethargy the next day and the following day. If Monday through Wednesday were fantastic, expect Thursday and Friday to be a little less than stellar. And vice versa, if Monday, Tuesday don't seem to be going all that well, hopefully you've taken care of yourself and addressed those issues, maybe got some hydration, maybe a few light workouts, and got some good rest, and then maybe Wednesday through Friday are going to be a little bit better. So just expecting those highs and lows is step number one. That way you can manage them better, because once you do have those lows, you're mentally prepared for them so that you're not caught off guard. The second aspect of this is recognizing when you're having one of those fantastic days, making the choice, am I going to continue riding this crazy wave of energy, knowing that it's going to exhaust me for the next couple of days? And if that's the case, great. Maybe you have some important business meetings or some transactions, or you're doing something that requires 1,000% of your focus and effort. Then you're going to have to weigh those odds, what's best for you. But if you're not that way, and for whatever reason, you're just amped up and fired up for no reason whatsoever, maybe it's time to say, okay, look, like I'm recognizing that I'm having one of these days, and I don't want to feel lethargic, or I don't want to have a come down the next few days or the last half of the week. I'm going to intentionally dial back my intensity, even though I'm feeling really good right now and I can go harder in your day, not necessarily in your workout, but in your day, and intentionally make that decision so that you can save yourself for the rest of the week, rest of the month, rest of the year. Because this is very applicable to your New Year's resolutions. Not only is this really good for your life, your relationships, your parenting, being a daughter or a son, there's so many real world applications to this concept, and we can really talk about it in any way, shape, or form. But this is applicable to your New Year's resolutions, because so often people choose New Year's resolutions that are unrealistic. They shoot for the moon, and yeah, maybe they land amongst the stars every now and again, but far too often people shoot for the moon and they never even get into outer space. And that's the typical pattern there with New Year's resolutions, which is why they don't work. It's not that you never got into the spaceship. It's that you took off, you started way too hot, and then you completely burned out of the sky. You didn't even make it into the outside of the of our own atmosphere. So it's great to have high expectations of yourself and others and all that stuff, but you also have to pace yourself. A New Year's resolution is just that. It's an entire year's worth of work. It's not just 1 week, go hard and post stuff on social and then hope that people forgot about your New Year's resolutions, right? It's designed, you should design your New Year's resolutions for a long-term sustainable approach. So anyway, I wanted to share that conversation with you because I'm giving my friend advice on this, and I'm thinking about my own life and my own fitness goals and my own business goals and relationship goals and parenting goals. And I'm thinking, you know what? Like, I've noticed that in myself that sometimes I go too hard and then I crash and burn. And these are not only unrealistic expectations for you, but they're also just not practical. So think about that throughout your day. If you're having a great day, make that choice. Either be pot committed to being fully on and energized throughout that day, knowing that there's going to be some letdown and come down later on in the week, or make the conscious decision that, hey, I'm recognizing that I'm having a good, fantastic day. Maybe I dial it down from a 10 to like a 7.5, 8. That way I can stay a 7.5 or an 8 the entire week, as opposed to completely blowing your load. no pun intended, completely blowing your load early on in the week or month or even worse, year. So think about that when you're navigating any of your goals, and especially your New Year's resolutions goal. I also had a really good conversation that I want to share that I had with my son yesterday. And so the rule that we have with the kids is that they are not allowed to be on their technology devices Monday through basically Friday afternoon, right after school, for the purposes of video games, you know, scrolling on the internet or whatever, being on apps, and just kind of zoning out in general. They can do some other things like here and there, depending on what's going on in the day. So it's not like they're just completely banned from technology. But for the most part, like the quote unquote fun stuff or the zoning out stuff is pretty much saved for the weekends, because as parents, we've just decided that it would be the best choice that to not necessarily restrict it fully. Like I said, every now and again, they can get on it and for special occasions. But for the most part, it's like, go outside. Like, we live in a great area, fresh air. Get out and play. And that typically works. There's pros and cons to everything. There's no perfect way of parenting. And the con of this model, the pro is obviously they get out more and they're not on technology as much. The con is that it's kind of like when you intentionally limit your alcohol consumption from Monday through Friday. What do you do on Saturday? You get fucking blitzed, right? Like, you get hammered drunk, right? Like, not everybody, but a lot of times people will go overboard because they've restricted themselves Monday through Friday. Same thing with macros, and same thing with anything, really, is that the more that you deprive yourself of certain things, the more you binge them when you can indulge in them. So that typically happens with my son, and he's so freaking funny because he really relishes in the weekend, because he knows that he can play his video games, he can be on the internet, he could do his thing, and there's really just kind of like the sky is the limit to as much as he wants. The downside of that is that he oftentimes stays a little too sedentary during the weekend. So this is the downside, full disclosure, full transparency. And what happens is he pretty much just plays video games all weekend. And so yesterday was Monday. At the time I'm recording this, it's Tuesday, the day before it goes live. So yesterday was Monday, and we go to the football field to go toss the ball around and get out and be active. And he starts saying how one of his legs are hurting. And now, of course, as the trainer, I'm just kind of like diagnosing it a little bit. I'm like, hey, like, what happened? Did you fall? Did you bang it on something? What happened? He goes, nothing. And I'm like, and he's 11, by the way. He goes, nothing. And I'm like, okay, so you just woke up one day and all of a sudden it hurts? And he goes, yeah, pretty much. He goes, I went to go run earlier, like during one of my breaks from school, and it started to like pinch. And he was like, it hurts right here. And he's basically pointing at like the front of his leg where like his hip and his quad meet. And I said, okay, like when you sit, do you lean to that side? And he's like, yeah, kind of. I said, when you play video games, do you lean to that side? He's like, yeah, I'm right-handed. So he's like describing how he sits and how he plays his games. And I said, okay, was this the case last week? Because you just went skiing last week. How was it skiing? It was like, totally fine. And so now I'm starting to piece it together that it's really not an injury. It's more of inflexibility or mobility issue or a lack of strength in that area. And just too much sitting is really what it boils down to. And the reason I'm sharing this is because I started to talk to him about pain management, and this is really, really important for adults, especially in our country, the United States. Most countries actually is that like if you feel and experience pain, it's bad pain. Any pain is bad, and that's not always the case. Sure, most of the time when your body is giving you pain signals, that is very, very most likely that it's going to be some sort of thing that's going to tell you to stop, right? Whether it be your lungs burning or your muscles burning and your body saying, hey, shut it down, you're not ready for this, or you tweak your knee, you tweak your shoulder, you tweak your back, and your body's like, whoop, shut it down. If you keep going, you're going to get even more injured. Listen to your pain signals. But if my son's story is resonating with you, where you sit a lot, and you're at your desk, or you're sitting because you're driving a lot, you commute to work, or maybe you're a delivery driver or what have you, or you just tend to be in that seated position very often. And then all of a sudden, something hurts, in particular surrounding your low back and hips and knees. It's almost always because of lack of strength and mobility. So we go to the field and we start tossing the ball around like we used to. And he's like, ah, he's like hobbling around. I'm just like, part of me is just kind of like rolling my eyes like, okay, stop being a little baby. You know what I mean? But I didn't say anything to him. I said, okay, look, we got to dial it back a little bit. Let's figure out what's going on. Let's just take a walk around the track a few times just to get the body moving and see if it gets better as you walk. And so it started to get a little bit warmer because we're moving, and his knee starts to feel better. So then we slowly start to toss the ball around, like, you know, start with 5 yards, then bump it up to like 10 yards, 15 yards. And now we're just kind of jogging around a little bit. And then we get distracted and we go over to do some other stuff. We stop playing football, but he's still active. He's running around. And now he's stopped thinking about it. How many of you can relate to that too? It's like when you're at the gym and you're actively thinking about where your knees are and your form and your technique, sometimes that mind-body connection, you're already pre-conditioned to expect pain, so therefore you feel the pain. But then you get out on the playing field, and whatever that playing field is for you, and next thing you know, you're running around, you're not thinking about it anymore. And so it's really, really fascinating. That's a different topic of conversation about the mind-body connection and what pain and chronic pain says about how much your brain is involved in that piece. But what I really want to say is I want everybody, and I was telling my son these exact words. I want you to pay attention to how your body feels when you are overly sedative. When you are inactive and sitting or laying for a prolonged period of time, pay very close attention to how your body feels during and after. And then on the flip end, pay very close attention to how your body feels while you're exercising and immediately after you exercise. Because after the hour and a half of movement with my son yesterday, I asked him, I said, how does your leg feel? And he says, it feels fine. And I stopped him right there because he's like running around at this point, like climbing trees and stuff. And so I'm like, stop right there. Pay attention. I said, if you don't remember anything from today, I want you to piece that together. Movement, no pain. Sedentary, pain. I said, you got it? And he goes, got it. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep reminding you of that. And I said, because there's so many people in this country, in this world, medical doctors included, that would have told you to not do anything today. And nothing fires me up more and bothers me more than that advice when your pain seemingly comes out of nowhere. Now, if you're in an accident, if you land wrong when you jump, if you throw out your back doing a deadlift, if you do something and you immediately feel the pain right after doing something, bump in, you know, stub your toe on the freaking couch, that's a very clear pain signal that your body is telling you that it is a direct correlation to what you just did, and you are now injured. Okay? So you gotta pay attention to that too. But in the event that your pain seemingly came out of nowhere and just kind of crept up and progressively got worse out of nowhere, that is a clear sign that it is due to lack of strength in the area and or lack of proper mobility in that area. One of two things. So I wanted to share that story with you because it's so applicable to most people's lifestyle in the Western culture, and I think they could really help people. Okay, listener questions. Number one, does a smoothie count towards your daily hydration? I love this question because you don't always think of a smoothie that's kind of like real thick and it's got a bunch of fruit and like the pulp and all sorts of goodness in there. You don't always think of that because it's so creamy. It's so thick. It's almost like a big thick soup. And you don't think of that as daily hydration. We think of daily hydration like water, juices, that sort of thing. And the short answer to this is yes, absolutely. Your smoothies, especially if they are full of fruits and veggies. Now, it gets a little tricky when you throw in ice cream or sorbet like they do at some major chains in the country. But the short answer is yes, absolutely. It does count, especially if it is a homemade product that you're doing your Vitamix or your Ninja Bullet or whatever, and it is coming from fruits and vegetables. Think about it this way. If you are out in the wild, and a lot of times I do this, I don't know if anybody else does this, but I, when faced with a question like this, or when faced with a lifestyle decision, I think to myself very often, and maybe I'm a fucking psycho for doing this, but I think, what would happen if we were, if this was 5,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, and we were basically fucking living in a cave somewhere? How would this go down? If I ate a strawberry or an orange or ate an apple or grabbed a carrot from the ground and started to eat it, would my thirst get quenched? And when you think of it that way, it's a very clear answer. I don't know if anybody's ever been so thirsty that you've eaten a grape and you're just like, damn, this feels so good. This tastes so good. And the reason is because obviously it's loaded with sugar and we're programmed to want more sugar for energy. But it's also because there's a hydrating effect to that, especially on one of those warm days. I remember in Pop Warner football, that was like our go-to snack at halftime was oranges and either Gatorade or Capri Suns. It was like the worst thing to have to give a kid is a Capri Sun in the middle of the heat. But anyway, I remember very vividly that those oranges, they tasted so damn good. And obvious, for obvious reasons. So it's very applicable to your smoothie question. Now, different fruits and vegetables have a different amount of not just nutrients and vitamins and stuff, but they all have a different amount of fluids. Obviously, the more juicy they are, the more fluids there's going to be in them. But the short answer to that is yes. And I mentioned soup earlier, and I want to address this because any fluid, even coffee, so this is that was my third point, but the second point is any fluid is going to be a hydrating factor for you. Now, there might be other things in the fluid that might have a dehydrating effect. So in the example of soups or the example of high sugar sorbets or gelatos or something like that that they put in smoothies sometimes, the high level of sugar and the high level of sodium that you'll find in soup can potentially have a dehydrating effect, especially the sodium piece. So if all you're doing is sipping on really high sodium soup, that fluid is going to be absorbed by your body and it's going to be distributed throughout your body. But if it's so high in sodium, the dehydrating effect of sodium might outweigh the hydrating effect of the fluid that you're drinking in the soup. So be careful. Be careful of that. You don't want it to be too salty. My recommendation is if you're eating soup, don't rely on that as a form of hydration. You want to make sure that you're drinking water with your soup. But the second one is the coffee one, because this is my final point on this question. This is a common thing, is that coffee dehydrates you. And the science is totally debunks that. That is a myth that's been debunked over and over again in the nutrition world. Coffee does not dehydrate you. What dehydrates you is the lifestyle habit of drinking the coffee. So how many people drink warm coffee and just chug it? Very few people. Sometimes I do that, but not always, right? But usually you're drinking your warm, hot coffee out of the pot. And what are you doing? You're sipping on it. And are you sipping on it with anything else? No. That would bastardize the coffee, especially if you have really good coffee in your cup, which I highly recommend you do. You are slowly sipping that coffee over the course of 30, 60, 90 minutes, however long it takes you. And that lifestyle habit of drinking the coffee slowly is the dehydrating effect that you get from drinking coffee. So a lot of people will associate the fact that, and I can relate to this, when I drink coffee, I go to the bathroom and my urine is extremely yellow, which is always a sign that you're slightly dehydrated. So what gives? And it really boils down to how fast are you drinking that coffee? If you want to do an experiment on this, I don't recommend you doing this, but I've done this before. Brew up a buttload of coffee and pour it in a big cup and just chug it. Or just drink your coffee a lot faster than you normally would. And drink a lot of it. We're talking like 2 or 3 cups worth. And you tell me if that dehydrates you. You're going to be pissing like a fucking racehorse. And the reason is because it doesn't dehydrate you. The science shows that there is a slight diuretic effect of caffeine. But the newer research will show that the slight diuretic effect of the caffeine in the coffee does not outweigh the hydrating effect from the fluid in the coffee. So I just want to throw that out there, that that is a myth and it's debunked right here on the Iron Crew podcast, backed by science. Okay, second question, how do I cut? I usually do running, but want to know how to lose body fat. This was a question asked in the Iron Crew Facebook group page. So I definitely recommend that you join that. The link is in the bio if you click on the programs link in the bio of this podcast. But this is a good question. How do I cut? I usually do running, but want to know how to lose body fat. It's a little bit of a layered question. I'm sorry, layered answer. But in general, how do you cut? And so just kind of asking this person a little bit more, is already a relatively low body fat, about 15%. So that's about average for your average male, but that's still kind of low. Like, this person doesn't have all that much body fat to lose. And if you're running a lot, then you would think that the weight that your body's going to shed off of you is going to be in the form of body fat. But that's not always true. And this is why I'm a huge fan of resistance training. It is because you need to give your body a reason to not only build muscle, but especially to maintain it. Your body is an incredible machine, and it will do what it needs to do in order to survive the long haul. And going back to the caveman days, we weren't always eating 365 days a year like we do today, all right? We were eating, but we weren't eating as much. So it was very common that during the spring, summer, and fall, we would eat, 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 gather, 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 hunt, 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 and we would have all this food. No refrigerators, so a lot of the stuff would go bad, and so you either ate it or it went bad. So you'd eat it, and then what happens when you overeat? Your body starts to build up a layer of body fat. It's kind of like what bears do. And then in the wintertime, when food is not around as much, there's not as much hunting going on, it's fucking cold as hell out, you don't really want to move all that much, well, you just kind of lay around a little bit more, and you're not as active, so you're not burning as many calories, thankfully, but there's just not as much to do, so now you're not eating as much, and your body is now relying on that body fat in order to sustain life through those harsh winter months. We don't get that luxury anymore, we don't really do that anymore, because food is obviously plentiful in most places. And so we're eating pretty much the same diet over and over. So there's really, what I'm getting at is you need to give your body a reason to shed the fat and build the muscle or maintain the muscle. So the reason I was mentioning that whole caveman cycle is that because our body wants to hold on to fat. It will do everything it can to hold on to fat, because that fat is going to get used as energy during a famine. When you don't have access to food, your body is going to use that as energy. Now, muscle is a very, very, resource draining muscle tissue. It basically requires a lot of protein, and it requires a lot of activity to maintain it. If you don't get the right activity and you don't get the amount of protein that you need, your body is going to ditch that muscle, because it costs your body a lot to maintain it. It requires you to have a faster metabolism, which is not good for that famine. It wants to get rid of the muscle. It wants to hold on to the body fat. So if you remember anything from that rant I just did, your body wants to hold on to fat. Your body wants to shed your muscle as fast as possible. Understanding that, you now can attack your exercise program to achieve whatever goal you're trying to get. So if you're truly trying to lose body fat, you need to add some resistance training into your workout routine. Now, if you're an avid runner or a marathon runner or a sprinter or something like that, then yeah, you don't want to get too bulky, because every pound of mass, no matter if it's fat or muscle, is going to affect your performance when you're running. So you want to be as lean or small as possible, but if your goal is to shed the fat, you have to resistance train. It doesn't have to be a lot. Literally, all you need to do is once or twice a week of some sort of resistance training, whether it be weighted lunges, squats, back squats, deadlifts, sumo deadlifts, dumbbell press, kettlebell swings, anything where you have a moderate to heavy weight in your hand or on your shoulders, and you are using your body to move that weight around. That's really all you need, once or twice a week, to maintain the muscle. And then if you're running on the other, if you're doing some sort of cardio or running, now your body is, you're giving your body a reason to shed the fat and burn the fat. So you have to attack it both ways. You have to be in a caloric deficit, meaning you're burning more than you're consuming. That's a given. You cannot lose weight without that. On the flip end, you're going to lose weight if you're in a caloric deficit, but if the exercise piece is not on point or what your body needs, it might just strip down the muscle. It might just lose muscle before it starts to strip body fat. That's what, when people get skinny fat, that's usually what happens. They might not be eating that much, but they're not doing any resistance training, so their body's just shedding all the muscle and holding on to the fat for that famine. So that's the answer to that, is how do you cut? You gotta lift weights at least a couple, once or twice a week, if not more. I recommend 3 or 4 days, but at bare minimum, once or twice a week, and you have to be in a caloric deficit. Okay, last question, number 3. Bear with me, it's a little bit of a longer one. I listened to your Bubble Butt episode and started doing sumo deadlifts, and I loved them. By the way, side note, I did an episode on how to build a bubble butt, and it's fantastic. My left hip has since kind of locked up, and I have tried all kinds of stretching and foam rolling, but it still hurts and limits me when I bend at the hip. Do you know what I can do to fix this? I'm 21 and I've been lifting for about 5 years. I love the detail. I love the detail in listener questions. I love it. Because all of those variables matter, right? Like, this is obviously a very young person. They've been lifting since they were 16, which is also young. And they're being very detailed about what they're training with, what types of exercises they're doing. So keep these great listener questions coming. So when you your hip is hurting after doing sumo deadlifts. So I'm assuming that everything was fine until the sumo deadlifts happened, and now all of a sudden the hip is hurting. Couple of things here is form and technique matters. Okay, this is why I bring up the fact that this is a young individual, because when you start lifting at 16, far too often it's because of sports, and far too often the trainers in these sports do not give a rat's ass about you long term. They do not give a rat's ass about your form. All they care about is you getting stronger, faster, and lifting more. So that's an unfortunate truth. And if your coach, your trainer, your athletic trainer, your strength and conditioning coach is not at least giving you some guidance as to how good form and technique works, then find a new one. But my assumption here is that maybe there's some form and technique issues that are not being addressed. So number one, reach out to a coach. You can hire me. Link is in the show notes. And get some guidance on that. If not, find somebody who's trusted in the community and find that person. And you don't, here's the thing, you don't need to hire a coach full-time forever, right? Like, you literally only need a coach for 6 sessions or a month, and that's it. And then they can walk you through all of these movements that you maybe have trouble with or don't know how to do, and then you can go fly on your own, right? Like, you don't need to be like, I'm going to commit to this coach for the rest of my life. No, that's actually not the goal. The goal of every trainer, secretly, hopefully, is to get you to fire them because you now know everything that you need to go thrive and live a healthy and happy life. But form matters, okay? Number two is the mobility, okay? So sometimes people stretch the area that might hurt. And that makes sense, right? If your hip is stretching, well, then I'm going to stretch my hip. If my back is stretching, I'm going to stretch my lower back. What we fail to realize, though, is that it goes back to the every action opposite and equal reaction, and that couldn't be more true when it comes to your pain management. very, very often your body will tell you there's pain in one area, and oftentimes that's not the source of the problem. So in the event of somebody who is experiencing hip pain, it could be that there's a tight glute, there's a tight hamstring, maybe a tight adductor, and you're basically having to unfuck the area that's the opposite of where the pain is. So if you're experiencing pain, don't always assume that it's going to be in that exact same area. You have to hit it from all angles. Sometimes you got to throw the kitchen sink at it to figure out what is actually wrong. But the advice that I gave this person through a DM was couch stretch. Couch stretch is a hip flexor stretch, and this is easily my favorite stretch of all time. If you're going to do one stretch for the rest of your life, I would highly recommend the couch stretch. That's on my YouTube channel, by the way, Iron Crew Athletics. So the couch stretch would be prescription number one. The second prescription would be some sort of a 90-90. I prefer the 90-90 with a torso twist. That's also on my YouTube channel. It's a little bit more of an unorthodox one, and I walk you through it because it's a little bit more challenging to get into. But once you're into it, oh my God, it's so good. It's like you know when someone's like rubbing your head, you know, like they're in the hair, you know, and they're just like giving you a nice scalp massage. Like that's how this 90-90 with a torso twist feels. You get into it and it takes a little effort to get into, and but then after you're just like, oh my God, I need this. This is what I've been needing. So hit that. Foam rolling is always a good idea. Foam rolling, not just the hips, but the glutes, the IT band, the quads, the inner thigh. And then finally, the seal pose. Seal pose is a very simple exercise that you can do, and it's basically a hip flexor exercise that's going to stretch out those hips. And then the last thing to address on this one is lifestyle. All right. So it goes back to like my son and I's conversation where we were talking about his lifestyle and like where the pain in the knee came from or the leg came from. You got to make sure that you are addressing that. If you are sitting for 6, 8, 10 hours per day, there's a strong chance that you're eventually going to feel pain based on that lifestyle. So one of the more classic studies within the last 20 years is sitting is the new smoking, right? And it's like, I mentioned that with my son the other day, is that, yeah, there's research now that says that sitting for 8 hours a day is just as bad as smoking cigarettes every day. And it's pretty remarkable that that's actually a fact. It will reduce your life expectancy the exact same, if not more, just like smoking will. So be conscious of that. If you're sitting and then doing a bunch of deadlifts and getting after it, well, guess what? You're going to have to do some mobility work in order to get that done. But it's not just any mobility work. It's the right type of mobility work. So just to recap, foam roll, everything within the hips, glutes, IT band, quads, inner thigh, hip flexors, and then hit the couch stretch, and then hit the 90-90. What does the 90-90 stretch, by the way? 90-90 stretches pretty much your whole, you know, middle torso and lower half. Your glutes, your IT band, your QL muscle, your lower back, a bunch of stuff. So look it up on my YouTube channel. It'll definitely help. And that's pretty much all I have for you guys. Shout out to everybody who submitted those questions and everybody who's listening. Absolutely freaking love you. And this really keeps me going. I will always apologize for this. So I apologize for apologizing, but you know, those last couple of months where I went MIA on the podcast, I apologize. That's never going to happen again. But you guys keep me going. Every time that I, you know, think about that, I, you know, getting messages like, where's the podcast? What's going on? It definitely makes me want to podcast more and keep this content flowing. How can you support this podcast, though? Before I log off, how can you support this podcast? There are many layers that you can support this podcast with, and the most valuable and potent are completely free and pretty dang easy. The easiest one is just hit that 5-star button if you're listening on iTunes or any app that allows you to rate this podcast. Give it a rating. Literally, that could take you 3 seconds. By the time I finish this sentence right now, you could have done it right now. So go do that right now, please. Leave a 5-star review. Second thing, takes a little bit more effort, but it's still free, is leave a rating, like an actual written rating. It doesn't matter if it's 3 words one word, nice, exclamation point with a thumbs up, or best podcast ever, or man, that guy's hair is really cool, or whatever the fuck you want to say, or this guy sucks. I don't even care if it's a bad review, to be honest with you. A review is a review, okay? Leave a review. Just type something out. The longer the better, but it doesn't have to be long. The third one, which is probably a little less effort than actually typing out a review, is share this with somebody. Just one person. Share it with your mother, your father, your uncle, your aunt, your grandpa, your grandfather, your son, your daughter, your cousin, whomever you want to share this with, anybody who is trying to get well on a physical, emotional, or psychological standpoint can benefit from the content that I share in this podcast. So please just share it through text, take a screenshot, put it up on your story on social media, however you want to share it, please share it with just one person today. It would mean the world to me. Other free ways that you could do that, support me, is just follow me on any one of my socials. Just look up Danny Birdie or Iron Crew Athletics. And then there's other ways that are a little bit more committing, but at the same time can still benefit you. The one that I would prefer you help me help you is by purchasing one of my fitness programs. Iron Crew fitness programs have just been launched the last couple of weeks, and everybody who's been using them has rave reviews, by the way. And there's something for everybody. There's Iron Crew Beginner, which is geared towards the true beginner, the overweight, or the elderly. So if you're brand spanking new or you're really out of shape, that's where I would start. My favorite one, absolute favorite, if I was going to do one program for the rest of my life, that would be Iron Crew Build. All right, this is a weightlifting program, and it has beginner, intermediate, and advanced levels. So if you're past that true beginner, elderly, you know, if you're elderly and you're relatively fit, you could do this. If you're past that beginner phase and you feel a little bit more comfortable doing certain exercises, I would do Iron Crew Build for the rest of my life, and I will always do that some variation of that program for the rest of my life. And why do I say that? Not because I'm the one that wrote it, but because it's the most sustainable approach to your fitness that you can possibly imagine. Strength training, resistance training is the most valuable exercise that anybody can be doing. And that's what this is. Because there's an intermediate, beginner, and advanced version, you can literally cycle through it your whole life. So if you're super stressed out and really busy at work, or you just had a kid or what have you, I would just do the beginner program. It's 3 days a week. That's it. It's a 3 day a week program when you're doing the beginner program. For the most part, I would live in the intermediate realm, and I would do the intermediate. It's a 4 day a week program. It's a full body split, or I should say upper body, lower body split twice a week with a few rest days in there throughout your week. And then if I'm really trying to get after it, or if I feel like King Kong and I just want to be on top of the world, or if I'm competing in something and I really want to be on top of my game, the advanced version, 6 days a week, and that is a guarantee that you will get in the best shape of your life. So Iron Crew Build is for sure my favorite program. If I was going to change it up, if you're thinking like, yo, like I am doing group fitness, or, you know, my personal trainer isn't all that great and I just want to take a quick break and do something a little bit different, or you've been doing Build and you just want a little bit of a change up, the HIIT program is phenomenal. It's only a 6 week program because that's all your body can really handle with high intensity like that. It's 6 week program. It's phenomenal. It's not just a bunch of random shit thrown up on a whiteboard. It is very detailed, it is very specific. And my favorite part about that, two things. One, it has a built-in strength component. Okay, so most HIIT programs don't have strength components. It's just a bunch of like lightweight stuff or no weight at all. And it's just geared towards like jacking up your heart rate and just leaving you on the floor in your pool of your own sweat, blood, and tears, which is fine. But then you lose strength. You remember going back to like my answer to the question of how you lean out. If you're not lifting heavy, your body's going to get rid of that muscle because it wants to hold on to the body fat. Remember, so I wanted to prevent that from happening with Iron Crew HIIT. And so there's a built-in strength component with every workout. The second part I like about it is there's corrective exercise days. Because it's so intense and because there's it's going to leave you on the floor in a pool of your own blood and sweat and tears, you need an active recovery day. And you need a specific active recovery day that allows your shoulder and your lower back and your hips and your knees to recover from that hard, hard effort. And then here's the third one. The third reason I like that program is because it only takes 45 minutes and you can do that with very minimal equipment. All you need is a pull-up bar and a pair of dumbbells. That's it. Oh, and a kettlebell. So you do need three things. You need a pair of dumbbells, a moderate weight kettlebell, and a pull-up bar. Those are the three things that you need. And I would say that's more of an intermediate to advanced program. And then the other one is Iron Crew Shred. Iron Crew Shred is for those who want to get fucking jacked. If you want to get jacked, if you want to get shredded, if you want to see your abs for the first time in your life, Iron Crew Shred will for sure get you there. It is not for the faint of heart. It is for sure an intermediate to advanced program. So if, you know, for that out of shape individual, this is not your program. For somebody who's never lifted weights, this is not your program. Build would be your program. Iron Crew Shred is one of those life-changing programs where you truly find out not what you're made of. That's not the intent. You truly find out where your limits are, which is extremely empowering and extremely exciting for a lot of people, myself included. In the summer of 2020 is when I created this program. So it's been dang near 2 years since I was experimenting with this program, and I got in the best shape of my life. And I don't think I'm ever going to go back. That's the thing. That's why I love this program, and it gives me goosebumps just thinking about it, because you will shatter barriers that you never knew existed. But you need the right program. You can't just expect to starve yourself and get six-pack abs. You can't just expect to do 1,000 crunches and expect to get six-pack abs. You know, you have to do it the right way, and you have to do it in a way that's not going to get you injured, and that is going to be a little bit more healthy than just starving yourself. The cool thing about Shred is that everything is phased. So the exercise program is phased. Reps, sets, rest periods are all different depending on where you are in the program. It's a 12-week program. And then the nutrition part is phased. This is something that I've never seen in an exercise program before, a prepackaged one, is you have a phased nutrition plan. And all you literally have to do is know what your lean body mass is. And it could be estimated. And I talk about how to estimate it if you don't want to go out and get it measured. It all you have to do is plug that in, and it spits out your macros so that you know exactly how much to eat on each and every day. So anyway, I can't say enough about Iron Crew Shred. Will warn you, it's not for the faint of heart. It's for the serious person only, intermediate and advanced. And then I have the Facebook group page that you can sign up for. That's also in the show notes. And the Nutrition Simplified. Finally, it's not an exercise program. It's a manual. It's a guide that will allow you to use nutrition to accomplish whatever goal you have in mind. So if you want to build muscle, if you want to burn body fat, if you want to maintain your weight, or if you want to improve your athletic performance, Nutrition Simplified gives you a very easy, straightforward, and practical way to get there using nutrition. And again, all you need to do is know what your body weight is and your estimated lean body mass, and you're going to be able to plug in your numbers and get exactly what you need to succeed in those realms. That's all I got for you guys. I'm starting to get cotton mouth. See you guys next week. And actually, no, I will see you guys Friday for the Prison Diaries.